Recorded live from Stockton, California, this is Jammin' with the Best.
Hear ye, hear ye. We are back.
Can we talk about Rick's contract now?
Finally.
Okay. Can we do it?
Yeah, we've known about it
for a while.
Bit, I didn't give it away on the last podcast all the way.
Yeah, wasn't our news to break.
No, I still don't. We still have other rumors going on.
Oh, there's some stuff we know.
I almost asked before the podcast, like, what do we not know yet?
Yeah.
Quote unquote.
They fill books with the stuff that I don't know. Literally.
Lighting. We don't know lighting. We're trying to figure it out. It's a little different in here than the last couple episodes. So
Learning it.
Slowly. Adjustments have been made.
Diffuse the good old fashioned way.
Yeah.
Soft paper.
Paper.
Noise. Yeah.
Technology right there. It looks real professional.
I was messing with lighting earlier today too. We got new camera.
Mm-hmm. Same camera, but new
same camera. Same camera. Yeah. The other one, dude, I want to see the picture count that we took with the old camera because we had it since, 2016 or something. I've had that camera for a while.
Damn.
The camera used to make my wrists hurt.
Yeah. My wrists click and pop.
Same.
Anytime I don't move my wrist for a minute, when I move it again, it pops.
For some reason, we weren't smart enough to use a tripod.
For a while,
for a long time.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're talking about, the camera making our wrist hurt. We were just holding the camera in place.
Oh, it still does it, even with the tripod
for me.
But yeah, I think they're just sensitive now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was definitely having to mess with white balance and all that stuff. And then Lightroom, our editing software, to get it to look as close to what you're going to get as possible, if not a little worse. I'd rather have you be surprised when you get it. And like, oh man, this looks a little better than the picture. Then disappointed.
It's way too easy to make these discs look great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny when we're pulling orders every now and then we'll see a picture of a disc and I have to look extra hard because I'm like, it's kind of, yep, got to be. Because some of those swirls don't stick out all the way.
Yeah. We have to move the contrast down just a little bit.
It's crazy. I've messed with just on my phone taking a picture of a disc. You can make a boring disc look really pretty.
Yeah.
And a pretty disc look wild.
Yep.
Yeah. Or very boring.
Oh. Yeah. So Rick, Kona, both signed with DD.
Yeah. Big exciting, deals. Man.
Yeah.
Both 4-year deals. Rick's worth $4 million. Kona's worth $500K. That's just guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
McCabe said that both of them will make more than that.
Yeah, I would imagine.
No doubt. Yeah. That's their floor.
Yep. So.
It's sort of like the Paul and Paige deals there, although Paige's was never public.
No, Paige's numbers aren't public.
Yeah, but I know, or at least I'm pretty sure, I know for sure on Paul's and I think on Paige's, after the first year they renegotiated.
Yeah.
Like, you are worth way more and we've been killing it, so we're going to up these numbers.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, good on the company.
Yeah, absolutely. That's how you keep people.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rick's getting his own line of discs too.
That is exciting. I wonder what he's going to end up going with.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that he's getting, so DD's coming out with the, what did I call it? I forgot it. I should have wrote this down.
Supreme?
The Supreme. Yeah, the Supreme series, which is their version of the Royal plastic, the Royal line.
Okay.
And I know Rick's getting at least one disc out of that as his signature.
Because he was throwing, obviously he was throwing daggers, he was throwing harps, he was throwing
compass.
Felons. And Explorers, the Compass, and like Enforcers.
Enforcers, I think even the Defender a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the Distance Driver is the easiest in for him to create something new. I feel like the Harp and the Dagger are probably going to stay. And maybe we'll get tweaked like a little bit. But he said Dagger's best putter that he's ever putted with.
And his numbers reflect that.
Raptor Legs was in full effect.
Was invented.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I remember that finish.
That was wild.
That was not the only big putt of that round. That
would have
been the biggest in the moment, but
It was the biggest because it was at OB.
Sure. Yeah, totally. And last hole.
Last hole for the win or for the tie?
I believe it was for the win, and they would have been tied if he laid up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Paul still had, a 45-footer or something like that.
That's true. He was first to putt.
Rick was first to putt.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about the helicopter he jumped out of?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
They rent that or is that just like theirs? That's just Kansas. The DD helicopter. Yeah.
They might have a helicopter pad in their backyard or something.
It did kind of have like a 90s vibe to the helicopter. I don't know if it was a brand new chop.
Oh, okay. You know, I don't know my helicopters, though.
I don't either.
Oh, you guys don't look at stuff like that? Okay.
Nice. No. Sam's a chopper nerd. No.
Up we're learning up on the helicopter stuff, you know.
Yeah, speaking of getting their own disc, KJ, too. KJ got a four-year extension.
Nice. Yes, he did.
He's another one we knew. Disc. I knew that. KJ actually, if you would have watched our stream, our Twitch streams. Twitch
stream, yeah.
KJ plays Fortnite with us a lot. And KJ was just leaking out all the info. He said all the discs that were coming out. He said he was resigned with Prodigy. He don't care on there. It's great.
There was a select people who knew about the
KJ Chris stuff. Eplin, I think, was the one that knew the most.
That's Spoonie, or is Spoonie a different
person? Spoonie hasn't dropped in a while.
Spoonie, come on now.
Need to send a welfare check out there, make sure he's good.
Yeah, I mean, he's sort of in the area because he stopped by the shop one day.
Yep.
So we got to go search him out and try to find him.
Yeah, definitely drop in some intel. And so I guess some of it we can talk about then.
With what?
With KJ's molds.
Yeah, the distortion and the
reverb.
Reverb.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. He mentioned it. Other people have mentioned it on Twitter did it on too.
Okay.
Someone said they want to see the distortion, and I'm like, all right.
Distortion is the upshot disc.
Yes.
Kind of like a zone harp type feel to it. A little bit wider diameter. I think.
Slower than his A3?
Yeah, definitely will be slower than that. We got to test him out, too.
Yeah.
Flies nice. Like, on forehand, the distortion, I'm going to get him confused a lot, because I don't know which
pretty
one.
Pretty sure the distortion is the putter. I think you're right.
On forehand, it'll flip up a little bit. It's not a complete meat hook.
It's kind of entropy-like to me.
Sure. Yeah, it's thinner, I think, than a harp, but wider diameter and a little bit more like beveled than a zone.
Yep.
Good flight. Yeah, on that forehand, on a decent rip, it's going to flip up a little bit, but definitely coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the reverb was pretty good feeling.
Yeah.
It reminded me a lot like a Zeus Destroyer.
They say like D1.5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little slower than the D-series to me.
And the plastic feels really nice. Is that going to be the plastic they put the first runs out with?
I don't know. I think so, maybe. It felt like 400 plastic.
We had the 500 plastic one.
Yeah.
We think it was the same thing at disc, at least. Pretty sure it is.
I'm pretty sure it's a reverb, and that thing was going beef to my bag. Because I need a beefy, like, destroyer type disc.
It has a D1 stamp on it, too.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's pretty cool.
Those are sweet. So I guess we can even drop those videos, too, because we did a little bit of video of them.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're allowed to do. We'll have to check.
Yeah, we'll double check. We might need to edit this out.
I need to.
If we get KJ's thumbs up, which I'm sure we will.
KJ doesn't answer his phone all the time, though, is the issue.
It's either immediate or not at all.
Or not at all. Like, you'll hear from him the next time you call him 4 days later.
Yeah, we're working on some stamp designs for it. And like, hey, here's a concept for the distortion. Mm-hmm. I think I said I got to throw them and, you know, they feel pretty good. Like, what do you think of the stamp design? And he says, trying to get the wording right. He says, yeah, they're coming out really nice. And I'm like, okay, you know, I think he's probably talking about the discs, but it could be the stamp design. I said, hey, do you want to, you know, make any tweaks to the stamp design or do you like it as is? And he goes, for sure. Like, all right, I got nothing out of this.
I love offering people options and they say stuff like that. It happens to me a lot too. On
KJ's great. So we were streaming with him yesterday and Kyle goes, I was like, yeah, we got some stamp designs Kyle wants to check out. And he was like, sick, I haven't looked at them yet. And the way he said it, it's like just so like lovable and shit. You're like, all right, cool. You are who you are.
Put him out and he's going to be like, man, I didn't really love the stamp design. Just throw my arms up. I don't know what else to do. I think he's got a manager now too. Alex.
I'm pretty sure they run because he signed with what's it called? What was the same? The T-Box, not the socks, but the
graphics.
Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure they run his Instagram also.
Okay.
Pretty sure.
Yeah, I mean, the the top players right now, the kind of entourage that they're building around them is necessary and getting larger every year.
Yeah. It feels like basketball. You sign an agent, you sign like a brand manager, you got accountants and shit. So you got it all. And you're going to have the same thing with all pro sports, really. So
it's got to be some interesting intel that those folks have, because I'm sure they're dealing with so many different pros kind of all at once. And I wonder how much of a blueprint they follow, kind of not so much copy and paste in a sense, but trying to make sure they're reflecting that pro's brand and their personality and their social.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's the hard thing. Running their social. That'd be hard.
You got to assume some personalities.
Yeah.
At that point. Yeah. And make sure that they're not all, you know, the same looking stuff from player to player.
Yeah.
Like, a, you know, if you're T-Box, how do you make sure that each one stands out a little bit, and how many, like, clients essentially do you bring on before it feels like it's just kind of cookie cutter? Yeah.
I don't know. T-Box definitely has a style.
For sure, and it's nice.
It is nice. I really like the way it looks.
But you can tell when it's theirs. Yep. You can tell when it's theirs because it's a, you know, certain professionalism to it.
Yep.
And it's, you know, it's the similar kind of look.
Yeah.
Where, and Kyle's doing some of that stuff too, where like their logo and some of their body is popping in front of their logo, some of it's popping behind. It's really clean.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff you can do with Photoshop and all those different Illustrator and whatnot.
Yeah, I wish I had those skills.
Oh, yeah. Putting that time in to learn the skills is, like, I don't know how many hours it would take.
Yeah, you could watch as many videos as you want on people showing you how to do it, but being able to do it well and doing it efficient and seeing those roadblocks ahead of time that could come up and doing things the right way.
Yeah, the speed's one thing.
Yeah.
Being able to do things fast.
Yeah.
Yes. Being able to pump it out is huge. That's how you scale, period.
Yeah, like those Fiverr guys. Those guys have some skills because...
Definitely, yeah. What a saturated marketplace, too.
Yeah.
It's a weird place to... It's a weird business concept, period.
Yeah, both the marketplace themselves, Fiverr, and, you know, that business model, and then the artists themselves.
Yeah. They seem... To not very, like, very few of them are from America, it seems like.
Sure.
Is what I've noticed.
Very few of them are $5 either.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
Guess it depends, the complexity for sure.
It's inflation. They didn't foresee needing
to change $1.25 store. Yep. Gosh darn it.
Did they change their name?
I don't know. My wife knows. She loves that place.
The dollar store?
Yeah, absolutely adores
it. Does she like the 99-cent store at all?
Yeah, I think from what I understand, it's pretty different, which, you know, it's just a penny. What do you know, what could change? But yeah, very different stuff. Like Dollar Tree, I guess, is a lot more like arts and crafts type stuff.
All right.
So that's what she's been doing. And she's in like some Facebook group, you know. It's wild.
Yeah. I remember like you, they're all kind of the same to me. Going to a store like that for Christmas one year because I was broke and still needed to get stuff. And that was one of the best decisions I made because those little dollar toys, they're fun.
Yeah.
They don't last very long because they're pieces of shit. But
yeah,
people are generally entertained by what you can get from them.
Yeah, it works. It works for that day. That's the only day I'm there. So
There was a toy store in Stockton. I think it's... The building's still there. I don't know if the business is there or not. It's called Gordon's Toy Stores. And they basically sell like the shitty party toys. Nice. Like the little, like, they'll have like bins you could pull out and buy a bunch of them.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they had like, that's where I used to go buy like all the, what are they called? Like the popper things where you throw them on the ground and they pop. Buy a bunch of those there. Stuff like that. Little army men.
That's wild. That's one hell of a business plan.
Yeah, right?
Like, just going to buy a bunch of junk. Yeah. Sell it at pretty much junk prices, but I think we can move it.
Yeah, just marked up.
It's a turnover game on steroids.
Yeah.
100%. Bunch of 1 cent items you're selling for 2 cents.
Yeah, let's go. Penny candy.
All the business models back in the day were weird to me because looking back on them, it's like I'm selling 25 cents of gas for or a gallon for a gas. Like, that's not very much dollars.
No, but at the cost time, of living.
Yeah, cost of living was way different. But just looking back on it, it feels really weird.
Yeah.
Buy a house for $10,000.
Yeah, car for a few hundred bucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your groceries are, you know, $5 a week, something like that.
That's wild. $5 can't even get you anything anymore.
Milk.
Yeah. $5 is the cheap advertised meals at fast food.
Yeah, which are mostly those are a lie.
Probably
now.
More like six or seven, Noah.
Yeah, four for $5 before tax and delivery.
Yeah.
the delivery.
That's one trap I haven't fallen into too hard so far. Because I know because as soon as you do it and realize how easy it is and convenient, that few extra bucks doesn't seem to matter.
It saves you like 45 minutes a day minimum.
Yeah. That's really the thing, is it's time spent. And I don't know if it's 45, but like driving back and forth somewhere. And it's just out of the routine.
Also, I would never eat a lot of the places that I eat on there.
Yeah.
Like Chick-fil-A's, I will never ever go drive to Chick-fil-A and wait in line.
No. Yeah.
It's legit quicker to get it delivered.
Oh, yeah.
Driving.
Dude, Chick-fil-A is the only reason I order Chick-fil-A is because how quick it is. And I haven't had it in a little bit. So.
Well, like, and kind of going on what you said, like the variety, the spice of life. But like I'll generally call in to places because I'm going home anyway to walk my dog and such. Yeah. And so I'll make sure like where I eat is en route to where I'm going, call in so I can stop by, pick it up and ditch.
If I were you, I would just eat a breakfast burrito every day for every meal.
Oh, yeah.
It's right there.
Yeah, I've thought about it.
What is that? Albertos right there?
Albertos. Yeah. I've done it for breakfast a few times, but I know it's probably a bad thing to continue to do.
They have, in all honesty, their other food's really good too. I don't know why. I just love the convenience of a breakfast burrito.
Breakfast burrito is great.
I had their California burrito a little bit ago, and that was bomb.
Yeah.
I've had I used to just get carnitas plates at all those spots.
Yep.
And there was just a pile of carnitas with rice and beans and great.
Yeah. Some quesadillas on the side.
Yep.
Quesadillas are great there too.
Terrible for you, but that's all right.
Yes. Absolutely. There's this California donuts place on the way to work as well. And I usually get their breakfast sandwich. It's like
right
a
next
croissant.
To Eric's.
Yeah. With that and the terrible
and
for
the bong
you,
store.
Not real cheese, but cheese and bacon. And they put mayonnaise on it, which I said that's no odd. The first few times. But then one time I was just like, yeah, sure. Just because I was in a hurry, didn't think about it. And I get mayonnaise on my breakfast sandwich now.
Do they do they toast it and then put mayonnaise on it? So it kind of melts into it and you don't really know it's mayonnaise.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say so because I think the first time I did it, I didn't quite realize the difference. I was like, that tastes good. And it's really just, it
greases it up almost.
Like it's not as dry.
Yeah.
Saying it's wet doesn't sound as good, but it's not as dry.
It's moist.
It's moist.
Well, I was thinking.
People hate that word.
It is moist. A polarizing word.
I don't know why people hate the sound of the word moist so much.
I think people don't hate it as much as they say they hate it. I think somebody said they hate it, and now everybody's like,
same thing, why everyone says that Die Hard's their favorite Christmas movie. It's the same thing. Like, sure, Die Hard's a Christmas movie, whatever.
That poll.
It's definitely not the best Christmas movie.
That ruined your day when you put out, what's the best Christmas movie? And everybody was like, Die Hard. You're like, fuck that shit. No, it's not.
Like, it's a good movie. I like Die Hard.
It's not the best Christmas movie.
I mean, yeah, sure, whatever. I think it's
one of the better movies that's considered a Christmas movie.
Yes.
But is it the best Christmas movie?
It's not a Christmas movie in the spirit of Christmas. It's just
it
happens during Christmas.
It's a Christmas movie the same way Harry Potter's a Christmas movie.
Great Christmas movie.
Yeah.
And great movie, Christmas or something.
Gremlins is the best Christmas movie, though.
Nah.
It's just
it's a little outdated.
You're just laughing out there. Yeah, Gremlins is great though. I love that movie. It's so dumb. It's got a little dumb little animal creature thing.
Plot holes.
I don't think I liked it enough as a kid, and so I don't have the nostalgia.
Same.
Yeah, my nostalgia is dumb because I just watched it. I think also one of my friends might have had a little doll too, a Gremlin doll, and that's part of this nostalgia.
Or was it a Furby?
I mean, they look the same, so
I think they are.
Yeah, nah. Pass. Pass on Gremlins.
This is the disc golf content you wanted.
This is it. This is it. This is why you tune in.
It's here. You, disc golf, you guys want to hear all disc golf content because there's a bunch of people that sign places.
This is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Mason Ford and Valerie Manujanos both signed a DD.
Yeah. Dude, DD's
is that a package deal?
Hard.
Do you think that was a package deal?
Maybe. I mean, we talked about that a little bit because Kat is leaving Prodigy.
Yep.
And, you know, Hannum is, you know, signed where he is. And it's like, okay, do you want, is it going to be something where they're magnetized essentially towards each other? Or with Mason and Valerie, are they, you know, staying together? To me, I'm like, go different places. You have more stuff to sell on the road.
Yeah. I think so too. I don't see the mutual benefit having this, so to I say, a power see, couple kind of stay in the same.
I can see how it can make some things easier.
Yeah. Or honestly, like it's probably not bad for branding where if someone, you know, loves DD and now they have the couple there, it's like, oh, you're my favorite couple in disc golf.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I think there's pros and cons. If it was me, I would absolutely go somewhere else so that you have, you know, hooks in essentially in a couple different places and you have a lot of variety with what you're able to sell on the road.
Yeah.
And what if you both get RVs?
Sure.
Or yeah. Two RVs.
It's exactly. A lot of gas.
It's a lot of room to store things though.
It is. Exactly. Well,
use one as storage and one as living.
Yep. Yeah. Part of my point, I don't know how much these pros are selling on the road anymore either.
Yeah, I don't know either. I feel like you're like Connor probably is.
Yeah, but like Kona, for example. Kona's signing, not selling anything. Yeah, signing on the road. That deal, you're probably not too worried about adding an extra $5,000 to $15,000 with all that work attached to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can. What did Rick say? He's like, I'm a professional disc golfer, not a professional marketer.
Right. Sure.
And that's like one of the things like, yeah, I'm a Kona's a professional disc golfer, not a professional salesperson. Mm-hmm. Like she actually is because she's great at selling things.
And yeah, her social is, as she, you know, touched on multiple times, her social is a big part of the deal that she got. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the question I had after the hypothetical one was, or rhetorical one was like, would you rather have the third best player who has the, you know, ninth best social media, or the ninth best player that has the third best social media?
Ninth best player that's third best. That's the Nate Sexton.
Social, yeah, the social matters. This,
like, I think as a business, that's almost a no-brainer in a sense.
Like Ezra's like kind of that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That mold, like one of the best brands in disc golf, but not in the top 10, most people at least.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's ready to break into that for sure. And yeah, start for it sure. Off
has
that
the
way.
Skills 100% to get there.
I think an interesting character in the game, Joel Freeman, who I think is his social and his playing ability have both increased over the last couple of years. Where I think he put out a post recently. He was like the top PDGA points earner this year.
Oh, nice.
And maybe of all time, I think he mentioned in his post.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
And I know his social media, I remember seeing his stuff a couple of years ago, and he was putting out content saying, like, I'm going to start doing more content now. And now I think I see him a lot of places on different socials.
Joel's a good one, and it's one that Innova kept. Like, obviously, there's a mass exodus right now.
That's the words that's, I keep seeing. Mass exodus.
Yeah, that's one of the storylines for sure.
I think if someone really wants to break into social, the spot right now is Twitter.
Yeah.
Twitter has a dearth of people, pros, stars.
Yes.
On Twitter. It has a handful. There's the Brody, McCabe's there.
Mm-hmm. Austin Hannum.
Austin Hannum. Like, there are people there for sure. And they're making, you stand out so easily.
Yeah.
Ricky's doing a lot of Twitter now. Yep. You stand out so easily on Twitter when you're a pro due to how many people are consuming content and the lack of people making content there. And also, it's such an easy way to show off who you are. It's your words and short and sweet. Just, you can tweet whatever you want.
Yeah, it's less manufactured than Facebook, Instagram. Mm-hmm.
Yes, 100%. Because there's a limit. You kind of just say what
you
want.
And it just seems more direct to the source.
Yeah, it seems like, I think it might be because of how fast Twitter is too.
Sure.
Because it's much faster than Instagram. Like
on Instagram too, it has the picture associated with it. Not that you can't post pictures on Twitter, but You know, you think of Instagram and you're scrolling through pictures and it's a very like presentable picture. Mm-hmm. And then you might read the copy.
Yeah.
Where Twitter is, you're just going to read what that person's saying or thinking or whatever at that time, the point they're trying to get across.
Yep. It's interesting. I think personalities just come through so easily on Twitter.
Yeah. And then TikTok, if you're going to do videos right now, that's the best way to kind of organically gain a lot of followers. Yep. Obviously YouTube is huge. That's where that's honestly like where disc golf viewership obviously lives.
Yep.
And content consumption for disc golf lives on YouTube.
Also the easiest place to make money.
True. Like, 100% true.
If you're good at YouTube, if you're in the top 5% on YouTube, you're going to make a lot of money. And if
everything else, you're just hoping to funnel people towards something else.
100%. Yeah, like pro disc golfers, if they do it right, can get $100,000 easily just from YouTube every year. Like I'm sure Ezra's getting $100,000 from YouTube every year.
Dude, I hope so. That's great.
Like just, it gets views. What Sean Jack told Heim, when he was here at OTB Open, told Heimberg, if you start a YouTube right now, it's $100,000 in your pocket.
Yep.
I would love to see his YouTube channel.
That'd be great.
He's got such an interesting personality.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I can say, but he mentioned some things about some YouTube and trying to have people do it for him.
Interesting.
Yeah, when he was here. I don't know where that got, if it's anywhere, if he was just fucking with me.
Yeah.
He could do that.
He would be good on it. I just feel like he would be pretty hesitant to like lead the charge. Like he does great on skins. He was great in the putting, the Jomez putting videos. But I feel like he would, I don't think he would be like great or would be super willing to be like a host.
I wonder if it's given some more confidence to do that, being on these skins matches and.
Yeah, maybe. Like, I hope so. I would love to see it.
People love him, so.
Yeah, he's amazing. I would absolutely watch that.
That Real Heimberg Instagram page is back. It's just the Friends of Heimberg.
Yeah, the Real Keimborg.
Yeah, the Real Keimborg, yeah.
I haven't seen that one.
It says it's his friends. Uh-huh. And like they're like, send any videos and pictures you have in of Calvin, and we'll post it.
I think that's almost part of his, like, I don't want to say gimmick, but like that's part of his
lore.
Yeah, right now is that he just doesn't do it.
Yeah.
You know, like James Conrad is sort of like that too, but I think he recognized that his move to MVP, they wanted him to do more of that stuff. And so he's done a little bit more. But I think that's kind of part of both of their personalities is.
I think that's why I don't like the Boba Fett.
Player first.
I think that might be the biggest reason.
Oh. Is because he shouldn't be essentially doing any like
big things. The part of the reason why Boba Fett was so amazing is you didn't know nothing about him, and he said five lines.
Dude, he had like 6 minutes of screen time.
Yeah,
throughout all the Star Wars movies,
and he's like the most loved character.
Yeah,
yeah.
And now I don't know. I didn't like the first episode. I haven't seen.
He's
the
an outlaw,
one
man. I mean, that was part of it. He's a bounty hunter. Looks badass. He's an outlaw.
He was hired by Darth Vader.
Yep.
They couldn't do that entire show with 6 minutes of screen time with him. Is why.
That'd be sick if they did, though.
Man, wouldn't that be weird?
It's a whole show about Boba Fett, but you only see him for but 6 minutes. Never in it. Like 12 seconds an episode.
Just building.
It's
intrigue.
Just implied Boba Fett stuff.
We got a hit on our hands.
Yeah.
We need to make a cartoon of Pirate Nate really badly.
I would like that.
Uh-huh. We got to find an animator. So if any guys are animators out there.
Pirate Nate's got a sweet, I don't know. I told him to do a distortion and a reverb because we need multiple stamps for both.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent me one last night that's sick.
Nice.
I don't know which one it's for.
The man's amazing.
Yeah. He goes, all right, I got a concept for one and I'll brainstorm the other. I'll hit you with the one in a few days. And he sent it last night. Like, that's dope.
So I was just started like writing the last Pirate Nate story, and I included some like Raven stuff in there, mechanical Ravens. Dude, I wrote about the mechanical Ravens before I found out about birds aren't real, which that is wild.
Basically means it's true.
Yeah. So he hit me up with like a Raven drawing just after reading that,
mm-hmm.
just and like, this is where our story is going next. And I'm like, okay, cool. Nice.
Yeah.
So
yeah, at the very least, like make a graphic novel.
out of it. You got to do something.
Because animating is a whole different step. But
a graphic novel, his friend could do that. Mm-hmm. His Spanish friend.
Yeah.
That guy was cool. I don't remember his name.
Just called him the Spaniard after a certain point.
He drew all over our egg and painted on it. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool. He has a comic strip in Spain.
Yeah. Talented humans, both of them.
Yep.
So Rick's deal, the 4-year, $1 million per year guaranteed. So 4-year, $4 million minimum. And we argued immediately, I don't know, a month or so ago when we found out about it, that it's better than the Paul deal.
Yep.
Because it's shorter time frame.
Yeah. You can renegotiate. That Paul can't.
Discraft's already shown that they're willing to like renegotiate. And it was such a huge headline. And I think that's also something to talk about with these two is all these contracts being public, mm-hmm. which we've pushed for a year now.
That's the best. Now I think the Chris Clemenses of the world, everyone knows their worth. Mm-hmm. Like they can go to a different company and be like, hey, Paul made this. I'm this spot in the world. Mm-hmm. I do this with social. I deserve X. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they have like enough actual numbers now. And it's not just one. It's 3, 4, 5. It'll become more and more and more.
Yeah.
I wonder, like KJ re-signed with Prodigy, and obviously the terms weren't disclosed, but I wonder at any point if they will do that, because it is multi-sided. One is, okay, players, you know what you're worth. You can ask for more. And then from the manufacturer side, they go, we're willing to pay this. That was, I think, a big thing for DD is, let's let everybody know we're willing to pay these contracts.
Yeah, I think so. Going back to the length of the deal, I think it's part of the thing is with Rick that I like better. Sure, Discraft and Paul have a lifetime relationship, basically, it seems like now. He'll be there forever, so it seems.
Yeah, yeah.
But Rick can now leverage all the companies in 4 years and be like, hey, I'm going to make this much, whether he wants to stay or not. Mm-hmm. He brings in bargaining power to his side just for the player's deal. And I think that part is huge because in 4 years, the sport might be giant.
In a very different place. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Both good or bad. Like it's a riskier move rather than.
It is a little bit. It is a little bit. I think that it's hard to. I wouldn't be surprised if like sales on our end dips in the next year over what we did in 2021.
Agreed.
But I don't think that the sport in general is going to go on some, you know, major downward trend over the next four.
No, I don't think so. But it is kind of possible still.
Yeah, it is.
Like, let's say for some reason, like the Pro Tour folded. Mm-hmm. Then disc golf would be in a spot where it's like, all right, things going to dip down for a little bit.
Yeah, it would depend on why. I would feel like someone would pick up the pieces.
I also don't think it's happening.
A lot of money.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. But hypothetically, with the 4-year deal, in a young sport like this.
Mm-hmm. And he's, what, 28? You know, he'll be early 30s still.
Yeah,
the time he's renegotiating.
We also don't really know we don't have a lot of info on what the ideal age is for professional disc golfers.
Well, look at Johnny. Jesus.
McRae?
Johnny McRae shooting a 1087 round in Florida to take a win.
Yeah. Like, we don't know how long, sports athletes are getting better at older ages.
Yeah, look at Brady.
Tom Brady and LeBron, two perfect examples. So we don't know.
I feel like they'll still be competing. Like Rick and Paul will still be competing at a pretty high level into their late 30s.
Agreed.
I don't think that it's going to be too. I don't think they'll be too competitive at Tom Brady's age.
And I also think
probably not.
In their late 30s, how many 12-year-olds right now are just going to be lighting it up?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another thing, too, is how much better will the athlete pool get?
Well, it's not like football where it's like you need grown men in the trenches. Right. It's, or you're getting tackled by somebody. It's a non-contact sport. Mm-hmm. Someone that's 16, 17, a Cole Radolin, mm-hmm. can come in and be shredding, Kyle Klein.
I think a lot of it
went to prom and is taking down events.
Kyle Klein's crazy. Yeah. Like it's kind of like Tiger.
Sure.
But Tiger was also much more physically physical as a teenager than
physical probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tiger was so physical as a teenager that it allowed him to compete at a higher level I mean, dude, he was bit like as a 18-year-old kid, he was bigger than everybody on tour, basically.
Yeah, and other I than think John that's Daly. A good thing. The two physical with like his, you know, potential Navy SEAL training or whatever,
yeah,
might have hurt him, but that's a whole different.
Yeah, I think disc golf will have some of that too, though. But you can be 18 years old and be the best in the world in a golf like sport.
And I think they'll be able to be, you know, 37 without much argument against it, and still be considered potentially one of the best in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think at 41, 42, they'll be able to be in contention, like but Phil. Not really in the conversation of
like Phil Mickelson. Best. Mm-hmm. He's like 40 something, right?
Yeah. Dude, I hope I'm wrong. I
won the Masters.
I love Paul and Rick. I've been Paul and Rick fans, like big, big Paul and Rick fans since before they won Worlds.
It's hard not to be a fan of both of them.
Yeah, it's funny too, because obviously it's the biggest rivalry we've had in our sport.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Certainly. Late. Yeah. Certainly the biggest. I
think it's the biggest.
Yeah, it's the biggest that we've had in the MPO side and in this like generation, I think is pretty easy to state.
Yeah.
And I love both of them. Like I think I was rooting for Paul more early on. Then when he had won four and Rick hadn't won any, I was rooting for him a little bit more. Part of it's just rooting for like the underdog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely love both of them, both of their games. We don't really know either one of them that well as far as like personality and like, you know, relationship and rooting for him for that reason.
We know a little, we've met both of them.
Yeah, we've talked to both of them a little bit, a couple different times.
My memory of Rick is one of my favorite disc golf memories ever.
Yeah, at SFO.
Yeah, that was so funny. We
didn't
just
he back into somebody's car, basically, or yeah, like really, really close.
So we just got done with practicing a practice round. I think the first year, maybe.
Second year, probably, because I was playing. So it was like 2019, maybe.
Yeah, and We finished our round. We were putting our stuff. We had just done like a pig video.
Yeah, we had put out some decent content. We were still throwing a lot and filming a lot and putting out that type of
dumb, stupid videos.
You, come to us for silly. So good. You know that.
Some dumb videos. And so like Rick's pulling up and he's on the phone and was he with Innova then?
Yeah.
In his Innova van.
Yep.
And he's like, looks over and he's like, you guys are those guys. You guys are the guys.
Which was
like,
just super flattering getting recognized.
Yeah, by Rick, of all people.
And this was before OTB was as well-known of a name as it is, however well-known it is right now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty humble on that. I still think there's a lot of people who don't know about us. But this was much earlier than that.
We had barely done any podcasts at that point, maybe.
Oh yeah, we had done probably five or six episodes.
Didn't you
episode seven live, was live there?
Didn't you just get a sticker on Paige's van?
Yeah, that's when we met Paige.
That's when we met Paige. Yeah, and then so like Rick's like goes to like stop and like park his car, and then the top part of SFO, there's not much room in the parking lot.
No, not at all.
And he started backing up and he's on the phone and he's like, I don't know, right after he's talking to us and he backs into someone's car.
Yeah, like
and
three or four people are trying to help guide him now at this point. Because it's not a subtle van. It's got his face all over it. Everybody knows who's in there.
And also like it's all pros up there and there's very little room.
Yeah.
And Rick hits somebody's car, like not hard, but just barely. And all you hear is, Ricky!
Ricky!
It was great. So that's one of my favorite moments ever in disc golf, and it was just Rick being Rick.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, we don't know him that well, but I picture that's just Rick being Rick.
Yeah.
Like, oops, just happened to back in. It's just a love tap. Didn't hit it that hard.
Yeah. Paul's kind of funny too, the little short time we met him.
Yeah, I mean, we met him first at Beat the Beast.
Yep.
He was there with Brody. He was playing, so Paul was playing solo. I think he's done this at least two Beat the Beast events now, and he plays singles and then does bring your own partner doubles to try to beat him. We've talked about it before on the podcast. This was 2 years ago, February.
Yep.
And so I think Brody had probably just signed to Discraft, and he was playing like odd man doubles, I think, or maybe best shot and
throw. I think it was odd man.
And so we talked to them a little bit after because we shredded. We played pretty well, 14 down on 18, but he dropped an 1,100 rated round on a bunch of AMs, basically, and shot 15. And so we talked with him for a while after that, and our name was Jamming with the Best.
Yep.
And he recognized it. It was a while ago where it was, we saw a Hannah story on Instagram that had us playing in the background.
Yeah.
It's like, oh shit, they listened to us, you know, that, or at least they did on one road once, trip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. And so, yeah, he saw our name on the scorecards. Jamming with the Best. Jamming with the Best. You guys are, you have a podcast, right? And so, yeah, we talked to him for a little bit there. And then at OTB Open last year,
yeah,
he was playing with Proctor, I think, and was like, hey, introduce me to the OTB guys after. And we talked to him for a minute before he got accosted by a bunch of people wanting signatures.
Dude, that was crazy. We were walking up from like 18's green, like over to like the stage kind of area. And like, we get like a quarter of the way and there's like 12 fans and then more coming. And we're like, all right, well, later, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's signing autographs.
Good luck.
There's a lot of people lined up at that too, right there.
A lot of different people.
Yeah.
Heimberg had a decent line at one point.
Yep.
It's cool to see.
Yeah.
I'm excited for next year. Talk to Leonard a little bit about the course design.
Ooh. Yeah. Is he going backwards?
Maybe. He's got some.
It's one of the rumors I heard.
Oh, his rumors. What he told me earlier was pretty cool. He wants to make it the hardest holes at the end.
Yeah.
So.
Some water at the end. Like 17 last year was great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Basically, he wants to do kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Finish over there.
Yeah. 18 was a little bit of a, I don't know if a letdown is the right, but like it didn't end on a high note.
No.
As far as hole difficulty or holes you want to remember, signature type holes. 17 was the one.
Especially, I think part of the issue too was not going through the triple mando.
Yeah.
Made it a little more boring.
True. Very true.
Because it just bailed out. It was kind of cool though, standing over there and watching all the pros throw over our heads.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was pretty sick.
Just launching.
Big ol' annies.
I've got some cool videos, of them throwing basically just right over our angle.
Yep.
That was a good time.
Super stoked.
We'll have an announcement too about that coming soon. I think Sean Jack, co-TD of OTB Open with Sean Mercy, they're, at least Sean Jack is probably going to come on the podcast, I don't know, sometime in the next few weeks and drop some intel on that tournament.
It's exciting stuff.
Everything about OTB Open is exciting.
It's true.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, let's glow. Is that what you said?
I don't know. Maybe I did. Maybe I didn't.
All right.
That's actually a Castoplast thing, I think. I feel like I've seen them because their glow is so good.
They do
good.
Have this. This is Let's Glow on their glow.
Yeah.
For good reason.
Their glow is great. Mm-hmm. We need more Glowbergs.
We need more glow everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, a guy asked today for InnovaGlow, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he came through and I'm just the Tour Series Rock 3.
Yeah,
there's really glow very much.
Do we have the Mako 3?
The Holly Finley Glow Mako 3.
Yeah.
They're all 160s, though, high 160s.
Yeah. I don't know if we have any drivers that are glow and Innova anyway.
Yeah, I just made another order through them today, and there's definitely no Glow Champion. I don't even know if there's Glow DX on there.
Mm.
They've done pretty well versus the other companies about having most of their SKUs available.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot grayed out on that order form.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if they're like, because they sell at Amazon and all those places. Yeah. I wonder if all of those and Walmart, if they've dropped in quantity or if they're just like, nah, you guys can have all that quantity.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't know. Those contracts I'd love to take a look at. I'm sure they're interesting. And I would assume it's a lot more like starter packs and then very limited SKUs and all the bagged stuff I picture at like Big Five.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Big Five, they have the bags. At Walmart, they definitely have singles.
Yeah.
And at Dick's, I think that it's all singles.
I mean, like individually bagged, which is still singles, but but free.
Yeah, that's free. Mm-hmm. Like especially at Dick's. All the Dick's I've been to have and they also have DD.
Okay, nice. Yeah. Well, then Play It Again obviously is big for all of them, but I think they're treated more like dealers than like giant contracts.
Yeah. I'm sure like the Walmart contract's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of Walmarts.
Yeah. That's true. That's wild.
Do you think they sell more at Walmarts than they do at retailers?
There's so many retailers that probably not. but it's got to be a decent amount. And then what's your demographic too? Like the person who's buying discs at Walmart probably isn't
people like my dad.
Yeah, probably isn't like a dedicated disc golfer. It's like your entry point.
It's a dude that has an RV and he's like, "Oh, there's a disc golf course at my little RV station."
And how many random Walmarts around the country are there that still have like AJ Destroyers in there? Some random
zero.
Random city.
I think
Oklahoma. The middle of nowhere. Just the initial stock of disc golf shit that they got.
You think that's still there? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I remember getting one pretty damn late at a Dick's Sporting Good.
You can find some gems there because like cool swirly discs or like clear champion discs will just sit there for a really long time.
Yeah.
Because not that many people shop for discs like that there.
Yeah.
Oh man. I found a sick clear 3-time Thunderbird once at a Walmart.
Yeah.
In the Walmart in Lodi, and I bought it. I was like, yeah, I need that.
Yeah. 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 I'm telling you, I feel like there's going to be gems at places like that.
And mm-hmm.
little thrift stores where people sold their old stock.
Thrift stores and play it again. So I think you can find some gems. Like a play it again. Yeah. It doesn't really have disc golf around.
Right. Yep.
But still has some discs. Yeah. I think play it. Where's the best place to find gems, Danny?
Maybe like a garage sale or somewhere like that. But as far as like a retail store, I got to imagine most of them are pretty picked over at this point. Yeah.
The retail stores is nowhere. I said like a play it again that was not near disc golf course.
Mm-hmm.
Or thrift stores.
Thrift stores, dude, I go into so many thrift stores in so many random spots, and I'm always kind of hoping that there might be discs, and there's always a mm-hmm. sports section, and there's never discs.
Thrift stores get picked over fast now.
Yeah.
Like, the people will be waiting at the door to open, like, line up in the morning at 6 a.m. to get that day's stuff that just got put out. It's wild.
I went to an antique store recently off of the Miracle Mile that's closing down, and everything was 70% off. And
is it the little small one that's like behind?
That's right on the mile.
Huh. There's a bunch of antique stores there.
But so. I remember going through, and I had Amazon up, and I was kind of looking around trying to see if I could play that game. But I didn't. I don't know. I had a hard time looking at.
So you don't use eBay, not Amazon.
Yeah,
eBay for sure.
eBay because you can look at sold. You can look at sold and completed items and see how much stuff recently sold for.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah, I was talking to our neighbor about that yesterday, who runs like an American Pickers style business out of there, and we're talking about it too. Like the in is very easy.
Yep.
You know, going to garage sales, going to thrift stores, estate sales, you know, whatever it might be, junking.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy and it's so fun to get it in, finding that reliable sales and finding your customers is tough.
Mm-hmm. You got to get like eBay does. Like if you get listed high on eBay, it's pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue is like things get saturated and there's 47 and you're on the third page and you're like, well, mm-hmm. I'm not going to get seen. So you got to figure out all the wording and all the, it's basically SEO.
Yep.
To get you bumped up higher. Interesting concept.
Yeah, a lot of fees. Shipping's not cheap.
No, and I'm pretty sure the return rates suck on eBay.
Mm.
Or like people being like, it's not what I wanted. It's broken. It's blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Interesting marketplaces.
Yeah, people have turned what was meant to be like, go sell like your extra camera on eBay.
Yeah.
To like, this is my full business. I'm making $500,000 a year.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's like, whoa. Like, it's kind of like good on you, but it also like, you kind of broke the system a little bit.
It's inevitable.
Yeah. It is. It's for sure inevitable, but it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. I think it would be so much fun to just be on the hunt all the time for those things. And that's where the attraction is. Plus the profit margin. You can buy something for $5 and you find out it's worth 700. Mm-hmm. Like that's where it is. But it's also very easy to just fill a warehouse full of stuff.
It's really easy to buy something that, sure, you bought it for $5 and it's worth $700, but there's three buyers in the world.
Yeah. And how do you get in front of them?
Yep.
You know?
And if you have the wrong personality, like you said, you could just end up junking a bunch of stuff in a warehouse and never moving it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's what made American Picker so good is all three of them are such great personalities. Mm-hmm. Like, they all three could do things on their own, like whatever they wanted. And like,
that show was fun, man.
That show was super fun. I think it's still going. I follow the chick on Twitter.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
She's all over the place doing all sorts of shit.
Yeah.
She is an influencer in every sense of the word.
Yeah, I only watched, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 episodes of it, but that was cool.
I also liked the, what was the show where they like buy the storage unit? Storage Wars?
Storage Wars.
Yeah.
I watched.
I heard a lot of that was staged.
I think it is staged, but still, you can get some fucking deals in Storage Wars.
Big time.
In Storage Wars. In storage units.
Mm-hmm. I think Greg was into that a little bit.
Oh, I could for sure see that. He went to looked at a storage unit in L.A. Not last time he went,
Recently, yep.
That guy.
It can be done in disc golf to some extent.
You have to hit up all the plate-agains.
Yeah, all the plate-agains, or it's just personal collections, basically, where a guy goes, I've got, you know, like, shit, someone could come to my house and offer me a decent chunk, and I would be happy to get rid of a lot of, like, collector discs that I've got just for, you know, good cash flow. Right now, I'm going through a bunch of stuff right now that I'm going to list auctions tomorrow, probably on Facebook. But it could be, there's a lot of collections out there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of wives that are tired of people's collections.
Oof, yeah, I got a few of those.
I had someone hit me up today who he asked me if he could make one large order and then have it split up and sent out at separate times.
Okay.
So his wife would see one charge instead of multiple charges.
Nice.
I told him, sure. Yeah. I was like, you do what you want, dude. Like, whatever helps you.
Yeah. Like, is there any, like, it's one of those things. Do businesses have any moral obligations?
No. My moral obligation is not in their marriage. You know, that's his moral obligation. Yeah, that's between them.
There was some golf website that was putting, would you like to say, mm-hmm. us to say, congrats on the giveaway.
Yep.
On the giveaway that you won this.
There should be an option too. Like, I don't, because we don't list like the invoices or anything. No. But to, would you like an invoice in here that says everything's worth half of what you know, everything cost half of what you paid for it?
Or for some people, everything costs double. Just to prove that you're like,
just flexing.
Yeah, people just flexing.
Look at this destroyer, bro. Paid $50. See how you did, buddy.
That's funny.
It could work, man. We could do a whole business of people lying to their significant others. There's money in that.
Yeah, there's a market for sure.
Yeah, lying in general is just there's a market for that general.
You can just make lie. More money off of lying.
Make disc golf become the WWE.
Ooh, interesting.
Just a bunch of crazy personalities. Have everything slightly rigged.
Manufactured drama.
Yeah.
So
kind of in and also very not.
You'd have to have people, like, not shaving strokes, but adding strokes on and shanking shots on purpose.
Here and there. Work. Yeah.
It could work.
If someone starts playing too hot and they're not like written into the script, you gotta be like, bro, you gotta fake an injury right now.
Or yeah, else so there will someone, be an injury.
Have some fan come tackle the guy.
Some Happy Gilmore shit.
That'd be so much fun. It reminds me of the steroid baseball league.
That would be a great league.
Be the best baseball league ever.
So if you could script 2022 disc golf, what would it look like?
Ooh.
What would the FPO side look like to start with?
The FPO side.
Katrina's moving sponsors, so maybe she starts out a little slow.
Yeah, she starts out slow and
Paige is on fire.
Yep.
Some of the young guns are killing it.
Yeah, Ella wins at least two tournaments.
And Europeans are here.
Oh, Europeans are here, huh?
Are they the villains, man?
No. Just
because they're overseas? Nah, I don't approve of that.
They can't be the villains. No. I like them too much. They're my favorites. True. Like, ooh. You know, Evelina hasn't finished outside of the top six in like 2 years.
Oh, yeah, what's the point? What's the point?
Shit.
It's reading the pros and cons of finishing outside the top six, and there was no pros, so I'm just going to finish inside the top six every time.
I want to watch Henna smash some drives again.
Yeah.
I think she has like the best hyzer game in the FPO side.
Dude, they're so good. Is Henna's game similar at all to like Haley?
It's like Simony.
Yeah.
Which like, is kind of Haley.
Yeah, Haley throws everything like flat to turnover.
To slight Annie, yeah.
And that's not really, like, they have the same body kind of.
It's more like
Castro's status. Tall and skinny.
Yeah.
That's more what I was thinking of initially, but yeah, game-wise.
Yeah. I mean, she's got, I think she has the most power in FPO. Hannah.
Yeah.
It's like her page, it's, I think. Ella. Kat. Ella's getting there. I don't know. Ella has the most power I've ever seen from someone playing for as little as she has played.
It's raw.
Her form could get cleaner.
Mm-hmm. She threw a shot at the OTB Open that was like from the same distance as Paige, but like on a worse angle, and she'd like hyzer like to flat. Hmm. And it was crazy. She didn't get quite as far, but the shot was so much harder, and she got like 20 feet, and I'm like, whoa, that was a smash.
I'm excited to see how she starts out. Mm-hmm. Certainly the courses in the beginning of the year favor like wide open and bomber style. You know, we've seen Simon and Eagle and Ezra, you know, shred there, where they certainly have skills in the woods, but distance is at a premium. Mm-hmm. I'll be excited to see how she starts out, especially after an off season of really working on this, you know, working on disc golf, where the last off season, I don't think she really did, right?
I think her last off season, she was like kind of learning how to play disc golf.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, I guess maybe was more focused casual on disc golf, but wasn't used to what she's doing now.
And also didn't quite know her potential maybe as far as where she fit in the division.
I mean, she just signed a 2-year contract with Discmania.
Yeah. Got elevated, right?
Got elevated on the team. So
yeah, it's almost like last year there was no proof of concept.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe the fastest person to like be in contention ever.
Yeah, quickest rise.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, she's in contention at like big events.
Mm-hmm. Certainly U.S. Women's was one of the biggest ones that was in Sacramento.
Which also doesn't really fit her style of play.
Sure. Yeah, well, those aren't long bomber courses.
No. And she played well at Portland, I'm pretty sure.
I think, yeah, just in the zone, probably in that period, something either mentally, you know, or just feeling the rhythm.
Kind of house money too, like.
Sure.
Just showing up and being like, oh, I am in position. That's cool. And just riding that wave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, expectations.
Also, she's been on the big moment a lot in other sports. Like,
that's big.
In ultimate, like, she's best player in the world, basically.
That mentality is learned.
It is, for sure. It's a skill. It's a skill, like...
Well, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting argument. Is it learned?
Yeah,
Is it something that you either have, like, essentially that clutch gene or you don't?
I don't think so.
I think there is a clutch gene.
The most clutch person in the world in basketball, they say, is Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan. And they're two of the people that missed the most shots, the clutch moments ever.
Like, willing to take them.
But I think there's a learning process in order to... Like the first few times, like, people don't win right away. Like, very rarely do you win right away. And if you are, you're just that much better than everybody.
But having the aptitude to be able to lose well and learn from that, to gain that mentality.
I think you're not in the position to be great unless you already have that.
Agreed.
Yeah, and I think clutchness is just something that comes with time.
Agreed.
Like sure, but Michael Jordan wasn't clutch until he won his first world championship.
But there's going to be people who put in as much time, miss as many shots, and don't end up being as clutch as that person who has a mentality to be able to take those losses.
There's zero stats that say that.
I just wonder if there are people that can't perform in the big game, period.
Right.
You know? Well, so we're only arguing about the ones that have proven that they can. But are there people who have plenty of skill,
Tony Romo, but
just shrink under pressure? And is that then something they're either, you know, born with or couldn't learn, and no matter how many chances they were given?
I think clutch is more of a concept by a fan, like by fans, than it is of any actual. And if you look at statistics, if you look at statistically, I'm almost guarantee you that shots at the end of games or whatever fall at the same rate as shots in the beginning of games for across all people. The issue is the sample size. How many? If you've taken four shots, I feel like if you really dumb
down that argument, it's just that there isn't any pressure, or that pressure doesn't affect
outcome. I don't think.
Which I don't think
pressure affects outcome when you're already on a stage. Like when you're already on that stage every day and you're a professional, I don't think pressure affects you as much. I think you've already learned to deal with pressure by that point.
Probably.
If you're in the lead after two rounds, you've already dealt with pressure for that entire for a whole round at the minimum. Like you're already dealing with pressure, so you're used to it.
Wide open 35 footer, no wind.
Sure.
On day one versus day four for the championship, I think that there's a little bit of a difference in performance. And some people it gets better, some people it gets worse.
Well, and you look at like Avery Jenkins in the world championship he won, he spoke on that 25 footer being the most nervy kind of putt that he had to put a lot of attention on. I don't think that attention is on the first. Or not first, maybe, but the 10th putt of the tournament from that distance.
Okay, and so to that attention that you pay to it, I think some people are going to make it because they're putting that attention, and some people are going to miss it because they're putting that attention
on
it.
Agreed, and I think that's that learned clutch thing that you're talking about.
I think if you give everybody 100 clutch putts in 100 situations, they're going to putt the exact same as they would on a non-clutch situation.
Yeah, I guess that's where we disagree.
Yeah.
Like, I think if you give enough people enough opportunities, they'll learn how to do it. Like, that's all I'm saying.
Sure.
Kobe Bryant is known as being a clutch player because he took 500 clutch shots.
Kobe Bryant took all
the
shots.
I think we all agree like, that's a learned thing.
That you can get better at it, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is.
But I think there's also some people who are just going to be better at it.
So here,
and some people are going to be worse in that situation.
So my take is some people are going to be better at it because they're willing to take the first clutch shot. And that's the only difference.
And that's the mentality.
Is that something you're born with or something that you can learn how to take that first shot, I guess, is the argument I could make.
My thing is the person that's good is going to be in those clutch situations all the time. And they're going to learn how to do it if you're good enough. Like, and if you're not good enough, you don't get the opportunity to learn in the clutch because you're not. That's all it is. Like, nobody's good in the clutch right away.
Like a Sergio Garcia.
Yeah.
Who's like, I'm going to choke under pressure, but he's good enough. He's in those spots.
Mm-hmm. Did he choke? Like, I don't know. I also think he didn't get to the spot enough to really prove it.
Maybe.
How many times did he get to those spots? Like, we know about him because there's three or four very huge moments. Mm-hmm. And I think that's more of timing than anything.
Well, and he went against Tiger. He was like the guy, more than Mickelson, because they were a little bit different in age. Mm-hmm. Like, he was the guy that went against Tiger and was like the phenom on the same
also,
rise.
Were you not clutch or were you just not as good as Tiger Woods?
Right.
Nobody was.
Exactly. I think that's the point. Like, Tiger Woods, sure, is he clutch? Yes. He's also better than everybody in the world.
But Sergio's got chances to beat him late and crumbles.
Because he's not as good as Tiger Woods.
Well, he's obviously not as good as Tiger Woods.
I think that's just my argument, is the better player wins more often, no matter how clutch you are or not.
I think he hits those same putts if there's not beating Tiger on the line, though.
Would it matter if it was Phil Mickelson on the line rather than Tiger? I think it would.
The Tiger effect was a known thing.
Yeah, which is just Tiger Woods is better than me.
I think he's in his head, yeah.
All right, that's a different thing. Individuals versus individual. Like, you can, one individual can be in another individual's head. But you're talking about grand scheme of things. Like, if Sergio Garcia got 40 opportunities to close it out, it would be the same rate as it would. But he got probably five opportunities.
See, I think it would be lower to close it out than it would be his putts on the first hole of any given tournament or the 12th hole of any given tournament.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I just think odds when you extrapolate things out over larger sample sizes,
sure,
things even out back to what they are. And that's like, I think that's what happens.
But we're talking about a micro moment, not a macro.
Sure. Like, you're talking about a micro moment, but
he's saying the micro moment in the macro of 40 of those micro moments would be the same as other micro moments when you look at it from 30,000 feet looking down. I just happen to disagree on, you know, the very end.
Yeah. So then DeMar DeRozan right now is the best clutch person of ever. That's what you're saying. Like, it just matters. So,
no, it's obviously not. And you know that.
No, I know that. Yeah. I've also just disagree completely. I've never been someone that thinks clutch is like a real thing. Mm-hmm. I think there's an adjustment period in big moments, but you learn. If you're good, you learn faster.
Sorry, Jer, but like, look at Jer towards the end of a round if we're going to beat him. And
I don't think it's the I think Jer has just a mental putting thing. It's all putting.
He's not the only one with that.
So, but I think it's
exacerbated later
on.
To
me, it's not a clutch thing. It's a confidence thing because he can be very clutch with his driver.
Sure.
He's just not confident in his putter.
I think that there's the clutch and confidence are quite tied.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And one thing I think you're right on is the more often you have those clutch moments to be able to take advantage of.
Yes.
Down the road, like, that compounds.
Also, the best players in the world are always better in the clutch. Just like,
well, because it's more of a normal moment for them.
It's not also a clutch
moment in their mind.
100%. That's my whole point.
No, yeah, I get that.
The reason why they're so good, too, you could argue, is because they've been good in those clutch moments. And so it's sort of a which came first. You know, are you really, really good or are you really, really clutch? Is part of the argument is where it's breaking down to.
So I think here's another concept. One of my biggest things I think about in disc golf that's wrong is people trying to make people bump to open way too fast. I think you should learn how to win first, especially for good players. And there's a learning how to win at the amateur division. That's the same thing. So sure, is that like in the definition clutch? Yes. But it's a learned skill. Mm-hmm. It's not an innate thing.
I think learning how to win is very important. It's just a matter of how long. You know, all right, you won three AM1 tournaments towards the end of the season.
I know, but there's plenty of people
that still want to play AM1. Some people.
100%. But there's plenty of people. Like, my first year winning AM1 tournaments, I won three tournaments. After my first win, everyone told me to bump.
Sure.
That's not correct.
Yeah,
that's not correct.
Yeah. It's a cat call. It's
natural for people to say.
Yeah, I know that, but it's just... It's one of those things where, once again, I think it's a learned thing. Clutch is not innate. It's not something that just happens. The more you do it, the better you get at it.
Yeah, I think we can all agree on that.
And the best players in the world get there more often. So therefore, they have more opportunities to get better at this skill.
Sure.
So therefore, they are become more clutch. We know the best players in the world is clutch. The Kobe's, the LeBron's.
The better you are, the more opportunities you will have to execute.
I think the original argument came from, like, person A and person B given the same exact opportunities, the same amount of opportunities to be clutch. The
better person will be more clutch.
There's going to, there's going to be a different outcome if you give 100 clutch moments.
Whoever's the best player will become the best clutch, most clutch player.
Makes tons of sense to me.
Yeah.
Well, sure. And it's easy to point at those wins.
Yep.
Yeah. But there's also there's a lot of other statistics. Like Ricky Wysocki is the number one player. He won the most tournaments this year. He also was shot the best in the first round. He had the highest overall rating in the first round this year.
Well, there's that too, where it's like, I think it was even Tiger for a while too, where it's like he was a front runner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he won most of the tournaments in the early rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And also the intimidation factor, you know, is probably part of it too, where other golfers just kind of, you know, shriveled sort of. But it's then front run versus can you win a close match too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just think the better you are, the more opportunities you get at all of it.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that's just my whole argument. Like, it's learned and the good players get more opportunities to learn.
Yeah, and it's certainly easy to agree with that. I think that there is something to being born with it too, though.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, sure. In the same way that you're born being 6'4" and
right,
yeah,
like
genetics,
I guess.
Randomness.
I guess my thing is, if you're going to be that good at something, you're going to have the mindset to be clutch. Also,
maybe
I think clutchness. Once again, you said clutchness and confidence are very closely related. Yes. How do you get confidence? Practice. How do you get good practice?
Are there people that are confident because of all the practice and because of that, and that's where they learn their confidence? Or are there people that just are purely confident, maybe overconfident?
Swaggy P is a perfect definition of that. Swaggy P is the most confident guy in the world, but he's not that great of a professional basketball player.
Yeah.
And he wasn't better in the clutch because he's supremely confident.
Well, I think
so. So the best players, like, once again, the skill wins over in the end.
I mean. Yeah, but the amount
of skill will always win.
The amount of will you have to win matters too. So skill and will, two very different things. You can be underskilled and overwilled and beat someone who's overly skilled and underwilled.
Skill and will are different, but
they are.
With a strong will, you can learn lots of skill.
Sure.
Is kind of the thing I'm getting at. Like,
right.
If
my older brother is a good example. He was awful at wrestling.
But people that have the will to be good enough to be in clutch situations are good enough. Like, they're going to learn that anyways.
Look at it like attributes in Madden. You know what I mean?
Well, half the attributes in Madden are fake to make people's ratings better.
You know, ignore that. But, like, you know, there's different things that you either come into league with where you're 75, 90, and 80 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be able to grow onto those. So maybe, you know, your skill is only 70, but your will is 90. Yeah, you're going to end up getting better. There's going to be some people that come in with skill of 90 and will of 75.
That's true.
And they're going to get better too, but it's, you know, it's at different rates.
It's for sure at different rates. But once again, large scale, whoever does it the most is going to get better at it. That's just my argument.
Very high
quality. Yeah, I don't think any of us are disagreeing on that. I think that there is something to clutch and being born with like the being in your very first attempt, being very comfortable and ready for that and not shying away from the moment and not being nervous and sweaty palms and shanking it. Because of that, you're ready for it.
Yeah, I suppose that there is some born with that. But I guess my argument there would just be like, if you're feeling that way, you're not going to be good enough to be in clutch moments.
Well, no, I think that there's plenty of people that come in and that already have that confidence and have the will and then have the skill. And they maybe just came in with 100 confidence and it still hasn't been shaken and they're getting better and better, but they've always wanted that moment. They've always been ready for that moment. They were never going to get worse in that moment. They were going to get a little better in that moment. And other people started with higher skill, but we're going to get just a little worse in that moment until they learned.
And some people just get broken in that moment too. And then
I think that's much. So I think being broken in a big moment is much more likely than like some guys just made for a moment.
And that comes like, with mentality though.
Okay. So, I mean, that's baseline and somebody starting lower and just being broken by and thinking they can never get to average or above average.
So how do you view, like, there are people that have, like, I don't know. Like, there are people that have failed like huge moments and also like redeem themselves.
Sure.
Is that person that like didn't have clutch and then all of a sudden had clutch or vice versa?
I could easily argue that.
Can clutch come and go then?
I mean, I think that clutch can come and go sort of like yips, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You could have
I almost brought up Chuck Knoblauch or like Billy Buckner on the Red Sox when he just great defender, just missed one ground ball.
I mean,
he's known as unclutch, but like, I'm sure if you looked at his career and looked at every big moment where he ever needed to field a ball, he fucking fielded every one of them.
Yeah.
And that, like, it's the same thing. Like,
that goes
it's
back to what you say about the fans' perspective.
Yeah, I think clutch. Clutch is a fan's, like, made. It's more made up by fans than it is like a skill like elite athletes think about.
I think there's two different perspectives. I think there's the fans' perspective, which is often wrong.
Do you think Kobe thought he wasn't clutch?
No. I don't think
because Kobe missed more shots in the prime time than anybody else. He has like one of the lower shooting percentages ever, but like,
Kobe was going to take every shot.
Yeah, he's going to take every shot.
Yeah. But like, I mean, picture this. You know, you played baseball where there are people that played good in big moments. And then so you've got a moment, bottom of the ninth, you're down by,
there were people that played in good and big moments when I was there watching. But I can't see every single game they've ever played in a big moment and tell you, yes, they were great in that. Like in the year I played with a person, they had some moments.
Or like an A-Rod example of like...
A-Rod was both. A-Rod was the least clutch player ever until he wasn't.
Sure.
And then he was the most clutch. A-Rod's the reason why the Yankees won the 2007 World Series.
Sure, he came in late.
Yeah. Up until that point, he was the most unclutch player ever.
Yeah. And one, you can easily change the narrative. And again, that's the fan perspective.
Yeah.
But I'm just wondering, is like there's people that, you know, going up to the plate in that moment that you go, okay, they've done this in this moment before.
Yeah, I mean, they're sure.
And he maybe isn't the best hitter, but you know, oh, they've done that in this moment before. I like them versus maybe the A-Rod type before he had proven it.
So for me, that would be more like this guy owns this hitter more than anything.
Well, yeah,
in baseball, there's more like it's all matchups. Yeah. Like it's less like, sure, there's a clutch thing that people talk about, but it's more matchups. Like if you have David Ortiz in a big moment, like he's one of the most clutch baseball players ever, but he's against like, I don't even know who the dirty lefty was back then, but like a modern, like a Chris Sale. He'd be like, no, I'm taking Chris Sale all day just because the matchup is so extreme.
Sure. I feel like putting is probably the best example for disc golf. And so it'd be like a great putter that just hasn't ever really hit it, you know, doesn't really hit any of those big putts that you expect him to hit late in the round.
Yeah.
Versus somebody who's not the best putter, but you know money's on the line. They've got a great chance to make it. Clutch gene versus just pure talent.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's funny how we ended up going like 20 minutes on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no clue. Like, I'm just a person, I think skill is going to win out in the long run all the time.
Sure, especially once you go large sample size, but in those, you know, in those moments that you think of.
I just don't like anecdotes never tell the whole story.
Sure.
Well, like, there's stats no pictures on the
scorecard.
Stats don't either, but like.
Well, and I think that's why it's a good discussion.
Yeah, I'm just on the side of skill.
But like Brady versus Manning, maybe like you could argue Manning was the more skillful player.
I could argue that
it's also a very much a team.
There's game, also so the thing you can argue that Tom Brady had the better coach and
better defense,
like a lot of things. Yeah.
But,
Brady Tom Brady got more opportunities to be in the clutch
big time.
Just his whole career got more opportunities. So once again, opportunities will make you be more clutch.
Always.
Yeah,
like did Kobe he get Bryant's more a perfect
opportunities
example.
Because he was better, or did he get more opportunities because of
his team was better? Also, yeah. There's multiple things. Once it's like,
but it's like okay, Manning didn't get enough opportunities to be clutch. He was in the playoffs a lot. He had all those opportunities in divisional and conference.
Yeah, just not as many. Is my thing.
The playoffs,
but also it's also very different because it's teams and like you can like. You can say Tim Tebow was clutch because the one time he got to the playoffs, he won a game.
Sure.
On a last play. Like, is he actually clutch? No.
That was clutch. And I'm not a
From
Tebow
a fan's
fan
perspective.
At all.
Yeah. Like, once again, fans will think things Always are clutch wrong. Or not clutch.
Always wrong.
Like, fans think Kobe Bryant's the most clutch player ever, and it's obvious he's not. You just remember more of those moments.
Or it's like statistics, like a Kirk Cousins in big games, in like nationally televised games,
yeah,
didn't perform well.
Yeah, timing is a big part of being clutch.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Is it just random timing, or is it because of that moment?
I think it's random timing most
of the
time.
See, I think there's extra pressure put on that moment, and some people live up to it and some people don't.
I think moments have an energy about it. There's an event energy where it's different than if you're going to go out and play casual compared to...
Oh, I agree with that. I think that... But all these people we're talking about that can be quote-unquote clutch or not clutch have all been in those moments 100 times.
And I think there's personalities who can handle that better from a baseline.
And I think
regardless of the moments that they've had, I think some personalities and some people are better at handling that moment.
I suppose that I lump that all in the bet, like being skill, like the better player will be better long, like in the long run. And I think that's like, maybe that's part of it is I equate being how mentally strong you are with being good. Mm-hmm. Like, well, regardless of being in like a clutch moment or not, like the people that are good are the most mentally strong.
I think there's plenty of talented people that can, you know, get out to a good lead and then hold. And
agreed.
I think all of the people that are on tour, to your point, Sam, is all of those people that are on tour are mentally strong and clutch or whatever enough to separate themselves from the field of people that don't tour or the local. But I think there is differentiation between all the people on tour, and it's not directly correlated to skill. The opportunities are pretty correlated to skill, but I think there's plenty of people that can throw down really good rounds, but when they need to at the very end are going to do a little bit different than other people, and it's not purely based on skill or opportunities.
Look at Nathan Queen.
Yep, we have one moment, though. Joel Freeman's won more play things than him.
Oh, totally.
He just won one moment that was worth $25,000 or whatever.
Yes, moment. 30.
Yeah, 30 grand. But why wasn't he clutch in any other moment leading up to that? You can argue that. Same exact point.
Well, that's, there is a skill.
Like, if these people that were clutch in these one moments, why, like, if they were so clutch, why weren't they clutch in every shot leading up to that point?
And going on,
because it's not clutch at that point, it's skill.
But it is. And, if you can't get there in the very beginning, if you're not good enough to just ride your skill to get to that point, every shot becomes clutch.
Sort of, but I think it's like almost like a video game where you're draining, you know, mana or whatever. You only have so much of that clutch, and it needs to be at the end. You can't use clutch on every single shot.
I agree. I think it's all skill. Mm-hmm. Like Paul Macbeth needs way less, has a full clutch bar all the time. He never needs to use it like nearly as often as someone else.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So like it's skill. Like
I'll take skill over clutch anytime.
And I think it's just my whole argument is like in the long run, skill matters more than anything.
And it does, but and it doesn't, I don't really believe it.
Well, and on that high a level, I think you're dealing with a ton of people who have high skill and high will. And it's a lot of micro changes. And like you said, kind of random moments of who's in the mood, who got talk shit to the other day by their significant other and is in a bad mood. And like
people are humans.
Little things can factor into those moments.
Mm-hmm. I also think one thing to like disc golf more than any sport is the randomization. Like a shot that is 2 inches offline can be much worse than a shot that's 2 feet offline.
Yeah.
At any point in time.
That's why I always try to miss by a lot.
Like, especially somewhere like Hornet's Nest.
Yeah.
Where it was like, I don't know, like you can say this guy wasn't clutch, but it was the eighth hole of the round, mm-hmm. but because he threw one bad shot, mm-hmm. it took him out of contention and then therefore he's no longer clutch.
Yeah. And USDGC is a great example of that too.
Yeah.
I think if you're out of contention on the eighth hole, you don't even have a chance to be clutch. I think clutch implies that it's at the end and you're in contention.
It's a moment.
So you don't think you can be clutch on I kind of disagree.
I think you can end up being clutch if you're still a moment in the third round and you're, you know, you need to scramble completely and it's on a freaking island, like, you know, hole 16 at DDO or something, and you need to hit that island. Sure. But I don't.
Well, to that point, I think the first 5 holes of any tournament is clutch moments because putting yourself in a really good position early matters.
I just think the whole definition of clutch,
is weird.
It's just kind of dumb.
It's vague.
Because we're trying to undefine something undefinable.
Because the whole definition of clutch is that the last hole matters more than any other hole. And I just disagree with that completely. I disagree with the premise.
Being tied on the third hole is different than being tied on the last, but a stroke is a stroke.
And you can just as easily lose a round on the first hole as you can on the last hole.
Mm-hmm.
And
because it's a cumulative thing.
But why does that matter? Why is...
Yeah, and if you're going to shank, if you're going to shank on every 40th shot and your 40th shot happens to be on the last hole, but you were going to shank anyway.
Yeah.
It's preordained, you know, in this hypothetical.
People mess up.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's a big, I don't know. I've won some big AM1 tournaments and I've fucking choked at some big AM1 tournaments. There's not a difference to me. I would have choked on that day anyways if it was a C tier or an A tier. It's not the clutch, the moment factor of it.
Maybe. I still think that there's that you obviously need skill to get yourself into the position on that 18th hole to make a shot or miss a shot.
Yeah.
I think we're arguing a few different things. That's not one of them. Mm-hmm. I think that there are people that are innately going to make that shot on the 18th hole or not with the exact same skill level.
I just know as an athlete, I've been shook in the dumbest of moments and in the biggest of moments. Mm-hmm. And the shakiness has nothing to do with how many people are watching or how big the moment is.
I think people it maybe does though.
Yeah. I think you're just a supreme talent.
No, I think some people just get shook more than others, period.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe then we're finally agreeing on.
But I don't think the moment matters. I don't.
I can't follow that logic. I think the moment matters for sure.
That's why so many.
I think.
players practice that moment as best as they can, even though the only way to practice that moment is to be in the moment.
Yeah, it's like
being in your backyard shooting, you know, free throws that matter when it really doesn't fucking matter is trying to build on that mentality.
Oh, trying to do something and actually being able to do it are different. So like people try to do a lot of things and like whether it happens or not. I just think like I've seen really, 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 really good athletes, like good baseball players that have been very, very clutch, just fucking chunder in adult league baseball games.
Sure.
And like, were they unclutch? Like, no.
Yeah, I mean, maybe in that moment they were, but that's okay. It's not an indictment on them.
That's my entire point. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Like, why were they clutch in a big moment and unclutch in a not big moment? But like, does it actually matter?
It's again, big sample size.
Like, yeah. That's my thing. Like,
I know, but I think we can still disagree on some of the points where big sample size in a clutch moment can be different than big sample size, not clutch moment.
Mm-hmm. But like, why? So my thing is they're both technically clutch moments, but one is a clutch moment with a lot of people there. And one's a clutch moment with nobody giving a damn.
It's still percentages, but I'm going to argue that some people is better. You know, take again the Madden attributes. These guys are both 75 skill level, and
So it's the same exact guy.
Sure, some of them in this bigger moment are going to succeed at a higher rate. That maybe they're 85 now, where they're still going to have 15% fail rate.
Yeah, just.
But it changes, is my argument. There's a change there.
I get your argument. I just don't know if I can agree with it.
Yeah, that's all right. We'll still be friends.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. You told me I wasn't your... No, never mind.
You told a lot of people.
You either told me I wasn't very good at things or I wasn't your friend the other day. I'm not sure which one it was.
Yeah, I said I wish I had talented friends and everybody looks around and is like, no, I'm not talented. I'm like, no, you're very talented. You're not my friend.
So, yeah. All right, let's get out of here. We argued enough about something stupid.
It was so clutch, though.
Loved it, though.
Clutch arguments.